Mordecai returned to the king's gate. It says, rather than, Mordecai decided it was time for a major promotion. And do you know why it's significant? Because that's where he's been all the time. His role has not gone to his head. In an old book published back in 1880, I found this insightful comment from a man named Alexander Raleigh. A proud, ambitious man would have said to himself, "No more of the king's gate for me. I shall direct my steps now to the king's palace and hold myself ready for honor, which surely must now be at hand." Mordecai seems to have said with himself, "If these things are designed for me in God's good providence, they will find me. But they must seek me, for I shall not seek them. Those who confer with them know my address. Mordecai, at the king's gate, will still find me. Let the crowd wonder and disperse. I have had enough of their incense. Let Haman go whither he will. He is in the hands of the Lord. Let my friends at home wait. They will all hear in time. I can wait best at the old place and in the accustomed way, at the king's gate." This is a good place for me to pause and probe. Have you recently been promoted? Has God's providence smiled on you so that your name is now honored in circles where you were once not even known? Have you come to a place of popularity and prosperity? Are you now esteemed in the eyes of others? If so, the real question is, are you still comfortable at the king's gate, or must you now live at the palace? Must you now be treated with special care and be given kid glove treatment and not bothered with everyday problems? Mordecai shrugged. Just drop me off where this all started, at the king's gate. No matter what happens to you, remember, the pit from which you've been dug. You'll find the best place on earth is still pretty close to your roots. Like the country western song reminds us, look how far I had to come to get back where I started from. 4. When nothing seems just, it is. If you're like me, you're often waiting for the other shoe to fall. In this instance, we're waiting for, and wanting, Haman to get what he deserves. Everything within us craves justice, and especially with a loser like Haman, who has strutted his stuff long enough. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried home mourning with his head covered. And Haman recounted to Zeresh his wife and all his friends everything that had happened to him. Esther chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. Remember the last time Haman went home, he was crowing, bragging about how great he was? Now he slides under the door, sniveling and whining about what has happened to him. The Haman types always blame other people for their misfortune. Have you noticed that? It's never, God has taught me a valuable lesson, or I have been humbled through this, or through this loss I have gained, or God has crushed my spirit, but thankfully I've learned to rely on him. Instead, invariably it is, if it hadn't been for him, if she hadn't said, if that person hadn't done, if that company hadn't, and on and on and on. Haman's like that. He rehearses all that has happened to him, not a word about what he brought on himself. Then his wise men and Zeresh his wife said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him." Esther chapter 6, verse 13. You've got to admire their theology. They are right on target. It sounds like a statement straight from Genesis. "And I will make you, the Jews, a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse." Genesis 12, verses 2 and 3. The marginal reference for these verses states, "I will bind under a curse." In today's terms, this Abrahamic covenant promises, "My people will be protected. You curse them, and you'll pay a terrible price." Never once in all of Haman's peacock strutting and evil plotting had God ignored him or his plan to murder Mordecai and the Jews. God had not missed his statements, the pride of his heart, the violent and prejudicial motives behind his decisions. God was invisible, but he was not out of touch or passive. He had not forgotten his people or his promises to them and to their enemies. While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. Esther chapter 6, verse 14. A knock came at the door, and before he could even get his thoughts together, Haman was swept out of the house and escorted to the palace for the banquet that would spell his doom. I can't help but wonder if on the way to the palace, Haman glanced again at the gallows he had built for Mordecai, shook his head, and regretted what he had done. It's the kind of thought Judas had too late, as reflected in an old English couplet,